Today's daf in Masechet Yomah, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Ayin Tet. We're holding at the bottom last three words on Ayin Chet Amud Beit. Boy Rav Papa, when the Mishnah stated kikotevet, did it mean a kotevet begar inita, or did it mean a kotevet below gar inita? Now this is very strange, since the Mishnah said the kikotevet kamoa. I'm not sure. It does make it pretty clear, doesn't it? So what in the world is the question? So I think that the approach that we should go with is basically the approach of the Oruch, which Tosis brings. Rashi, there's all kinds of discussions about what does Rashi actually mean, because the Girsan Rashi needs to be changed. Although on the surface, he seems to suggest that kamo uchagarinita might have meant kagoa or kagarinita, meaning one or the other, which doesn't make sense because they can't be precisely the same, as Tosis points out. So the Oruch's approach is very beautiful. It ties into the Gemara later on, and it's simply like this. Does it mean kikotevet agasa, including the natural kotevet with its garin internally? Or does it mean the equivalent of the volume of a kotevet hagasa, that is to say, the meat of the kotevet hagasa, plus the pit of the kotevet hagasa? And that's not the same. And the reason that it's not the same is because there is a certain amount of space that develops in the kotevet hagasa between the pit and the meat of the fruit. And therefore, if you would say kikotevet agasa, meaning in its natural form, then it would mean that you would not squeeze down the kotevet agasa, but you would include the actual airspace of the area between the pit, the halal, as it's called over here, between the pit and the meat. And that's the question. So in other words, is it a squeezed tight kotevet agasa, or is it a natural swollen kotevet agasa? This is our first question. Boy, Rav Ashi had a different question than Rav Papa. Rav Papa asked about the shear of kotevet agasa. Rav Ashi wanted to know that when we learned in the Mishnah of Ohalot that we recently had, that the shear of an human etzem, that's metame, is the size of a seora, which is a barley kernel. So now the question is, does that mean barley beklipata or below klipata? Does it include the shell of the barley, or does it mean shelled barley? Is it referring to lacha, or is it referring to yevesha? Are we talking about a fresh kernel, which is a little bit swollen, or is it a dried-out barley? Now, it's interesting that Rav Papa asks one question, and Rav Ashi asks the other question, and the mashmaut is that neither of them were particularly troubled by the other one's question. Why would that be? Well, Rav Ashi, lo mi boi lehoda Rav Papa. Rav Ashi says, look, if the point of the Mishnah is that it's using the word kotevet gasa, then that's the meaning of gasa. Gasa means we're looking to be expansive over here. You're looking to be expansive. So then that's why it's stressing, you know, that big kotevet, which means including all of its airspace. And that's the point. So-called kama de gasa, that's like as big as they get. And therefore, obviously, it means the natural state, the way we were understanding it, the natural state of the kotevet with the airspace inside and the pit. Rav Papa wasn't concerned about Rav Ashi, which is the question of what the shiur is of the seora, because he says, look, a fresh kernel of barley is never referred to as a seora. It's referred to as a shibolet. It's a shibolet of it, not a seora. It's still basically the same as when it's in the field on the shibolet. And if it's shelo beklipata, if it's without a shell, so then it must be called an ushla. It can't be fresh in either event. The only way that it works is that it's referring to a dry piece of barley that is still in its shell, in its natural state, and it's not an ushla. So therefore, I don't think that that's a problem. Anyway, what is exactly the shear that we have over here? So, Omar Rabba, there's a question over here, what to be Goris, and Mr. Hashas changes Rava over here to Rabba, which fits in later better. So, Omar Rabba, Omar Yehuda, Kotevetaka Sasha Amru, this shear is actually larger than the shear of a kibetza. And where do we get such a shear from? Because Kimlu L'Rabbonan, the Behachi Miyatva Da'ate, the Rabbonan were omed on the fact that this is the amount of food that it takes that would make you be in a state of semi-satisfaction, so at least you feel relaxed and not desperate to eat. And that is the end of Inui. Now, of course, the point over here is that normally the shiurim that are given to us, Halacha L'Moshe Mitzrayim, we know that something that has to do with Achila, if the Torah had said, do not eat, so then do not eat would have meant B'Kizayit, obviously. The Torah never says, do not eat on Yom Kippur. The Torah says, Anefesh asher lo tu'uneh. So tu'uneh means that you should feel the pain of the deprivation of the food. So then what that means is that it's telling us that the shear is definitely not a kizayit, but since there is no given to that amount, so it leaves it up to the Rabbanan to determine. So the Rabbanan determined that the shear over here is a kotevet agasa, and that particular amount serves as the precise amount that takes away the element of inui, and that is what the Torah was marked on in Yom HaKippurim. So less than that amount, even though it's clearly eating, it may be achila, but it's lo miat padate, and he would still be considered to be in a state of inui, and therefore he would not be over on Yom HaKippurim. Ask the Gemara, how can you make this assumption that the kotevet hagasa is larger than a kibetza? I'll prove to you that that's not the case, because meitve, take a look at the Mishnah that we have in Sukkah. Ma'aseh ve'evilu Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai li'tom et ha'tafshil. They once brought a little bit of a kugel to taste to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And they brought once to Rabbi Gamliel, they were outside of the Sukkah. They once brought to Rabbi Gamliel a shear that was basically two kotavot plus a pail of water. And both of them, the Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and Rabbi Gamliel insisted that they bring them into the sukkah, and they didn't want to even be tayim outside of the sukkah, or to eat, in Rabbi Gamliel's case, outside of the sukkah. V'toni alan, over there, we worked out in the Gemara that the Mishnah basically was saying like this, lo mipnei sha'alach hakach, they insisted that it be in the sukkah, not because the halacha really is that you need to eat it in the sukkah. The halacha is not that you need to eat it in the sukkah. But they wanted to be machmer on themselves and not to eat even this small amount of food outside of the sukkah. Ela shiratzu lahachmir al atzmam. Fine. So, but what that means, as we'll see, that this has implications about the shira of achila. Because kishenatnu lo l'Rabbi Tzadok ochel pachot mikibetza. Now here's where we get involved in the actual shir, because the Mishnah continues to say that when they gave Rav Tzadok food that was smaller than the size of a kibetza, and this would be even, when talking about food, it would be even lechem. So they gave him mamish, real food, which normally would be, we would consider to be an achila for all issues, but it was less than the size of a kibetza. The weirdest thing, he ate it without netilas yadayim and took it instead with a handkerchief to eat it, and he ate it outside of the sukkah, and he didn't say Birkas HaMazon after eating it. So in other words, he held that if there was a shear of kibetza, fine, then he would have been chayev to take it to the sukkah. He would have been chayev in Atilas Yadayim. He would have been chayev to say Birkas HaMazon afterwards. But since it was less than the shear of a kibetza, so he held that it was okay to eat it outside of the sukkah. He held that it was okay to eat it without Netilat Yadayim. And he held that you're not chayiv to say Birkat HaMazon on a shear. That obviously, remember, we had that at Machlokas in Brochus when we learned the famous Machlokas, whether the din is Aliba de Rabbi Yehuda, that Birkat HaMazon is only the shear of Kibetza. Mashenkin, we, of course, were Machmer like Rabbi Meir. That's the shear of a Kizayit. But anyway, that's what Rav Tzadok held. Now, what's the question? What does that have to do with us? Very simply, because the mashma'ut over here is that if they would have given him the shear of a kibetza, then they would have needed to have a sukkah. So then that means in the same Mishnah, which is saying that Rabbi Gamliel was just being machmer on himself when he ate two kotavot. And really, you did not have to eat two kotavot in the sukkah, but you would have to eat anything that was the size of a kibetza and up in the sukkah. Now, does that make sense to say that a kotavot agasa is bigger than a kibetza and two kotavot are smaller than a kibetza? Is that really true? So Isak Daitach, Kotevet Agasasha Amru. I mean, you insisted that the Kotevet Agasa is bigger than a kibetza. So then does it make sense to you that Ashta Shtekotavot below Gar Inan lo have a kibetza? So now we're showing that when they brought him the two kotavot over there, obviously he didn't eat the bit. So it would mean the meat of two normal kotavot without the garinin in them are not considered to be the size of a kibetza. But one kotevet akasa that includes garinita is actually more than a kibetza? This makes sense? Rav Yirmiyah, yes, it absolutely does. Makes sense. Two normal-sized kotavot, where you're not eating anything to take up the place of the pit, are indeed less than a kibetza. But the kotevet akasa, if it includes the garin, indeed is larger than a kibetza. And Rav Papa says, look, this is even a common saying, because people have this popular saying that trei kabe de tamri, if you buy yourselves two big bushels of tamarim, of dates, in the end, you're going to get one whole bushel of pits with a little bit more. So that's good for what they're saying, that it turns out that you've got a lot of wasted space in that, because a lot of it is just connected to pits. So therefore, it makes a lot of sense. A kotevet agasa, which we're saying includes the pit, is actually larger than just the meat of two normal kotavot. It really makes sense. Rava Omar, as Rava says, there's no problem with the issue in sukkah. There wasn't the reason that it says over there they were being machmer on themselves. That wasn't because of the shear that they were being machmer. Rabbi Gamliel was being machmer to eat it in the sukkah because of the fact that it was fruit. That's the point. Fruit does not need a sukkah. Nothing to do with how much fruit. So the idea over there is that it's considered to be an achila, which is an achilas arai, and it's not considered to be a kvias of a su'udah in terms of the chiyav of a su'udah in a sukkah, because peri lobo a sukkah. And therefore, forget about looking at the shear. We're comparing it. The reason that he didn't eat it in the sukkah, Rabbi Gamliel, was because it was only the shear of shtei kotavot. It could have been 10 kotavot he wouldn't have eaten in the sukkah, because it's fruit. That's the point. And that never needs a sukkah. Fruit never needs a sukkah, says the Gemara. Is that true? Meitvei, Omar Rebbe, kishayinu lomdim Torah itzor Rabbi Lazar ben Shamua, heviu lefanenu te'inim va'anavim. When we were learning, and we were learning during Sukkot, it was Ben Azmanim, it was very nice, we were all sitting together, and we were learning by Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, and they brought like a plate that had te'enim and anavim, so we ate them specifically as an achilas arai. We ate them like a snack outside of the Sukkot. So why do you think that he says we ate them as a snack? I mean, apparently what he wanted to say was that we specifically avoided being koveya asu'udah on them by eating less than the shear. So only achilas arai. But had we actually been koveya them as a proper amount, whatever that is that we're not talking about, but the point is that Rebbe isn't stressing that it's not because fruit are not chayav in a sukkah, it's because of the way we ate the fruit, by making sure that we ate pochus mikashir to make it an achilas arai. So you see, obviously, that fruit are chayav in a sukkah. So what do you say? No, we were misunderstanding. Achalnum achilas harai means that we ate them as an achilas harai. In other words, because of the fact that they are fruit, eating them outside of the sukkah is what is normally defined as achilas harai, even for bread. So if you're allowed to eat bread achilas harai, over there it is defined by the shear. True. But we ate fruit because fruit are always achilas harai. That's what it means to say. So that's one thing that actually will back up Rava. Or we could say that what Rebbe meant was that these are two different things. Not that we ate the fruit that they brought up as an achilas arai. What he was saying is va'achalnu plus achilas arai. We also ate bread ka'achilas arai together with these fruit. So we had a small amount of bread with them, and then we had this large amount of fruit that we continued snacking on, and we ate them all together outside of the sukkah. So it would be two separate statements. Okay. Maybe now that we've actually found a way to be able to live with Rava, maybe we could even bring a raya to Rava and indeed show that fruits don't need to be eaten in a sukkah. Where would we get that from? Because it says, Im hishlim b'minei targima, the words lefichach is basically taken out by many of the beforshim, because this, it doesn't say it anywhere. So Im hishlim b'minei targima, what we're talking about over there is the sheet of Reb Eliezer. Reb Eliezer holds that you are mechuyev to eat two meals a day in a sukkah. He's derish this from the pasuk. So if you eat two meals a day, then that means that over the course of sukkahs, you would be eating 14 different meals in your sukkah. One at night and one at day. Barry, okay. We know you're here. We're happy that you're here, but you don't have to get us all dizzy. Welcome back. Welcome back to the daf. We haven't seen you in a while. So it's very good to see you. But not upside down. Anyway, so it says over there that even if you didn't have a full meal, but you could still be yotze if you ate a meal that was just targima. So targima means like hors d'oeuvres kind of things, but without having bread. And that would mean you could have like different kinds of meats, and you could have the type of things, fish, meat, stuff like that is mini targima, not with bread. Now, if you're going to tell me that you are actually chayef to eat fruit in a sukkah, so Isaac died peri bo sukkah, so why does it say mini targima, which normally means things that would be eaten as part of a meal, except that you leave out the bread, but not fruit? So then it could say that if you would eat mini targima or fruit, then you would be yotze your 14 separate su'udas. Because if you ate enough fruit, then you would also be yotze. So in other words, since it's stressing that you would need to be eating some primary ingredient to a meal, which would be like meat or fish, so then apparently you would not be yotze. Why? Because Rav is right, because fruit doesn't really need a sukkah. So if it doesn't need a sukkah, how could this be your meal in the sukkah? So, well, not necessarily, because mine targima does not necessarily mean only things that are meat and fish. Mine targima means things that you would eat on a little toothpick and so on. And that certainly could include peirot. So maybe it means with peirot. Or maybe it's talking about, as in many places, where when you didn't have modern distribution, it's very difficult to get fruit. So you might say, it could be in a mokum where we don't have peirot. I'm just saying, even if you don't have peirot, it's not a problem, because you could always be yotze with the mini targima. Rav Zvid, he argues on the whole fundamental assumption about the size of the kotevet hagasa. And he says this is absolutely, Rabin's approach is absolutely wrong. The kotevet hagasa is actually less than a kebetza. And I'll prove it to you. Because as you will recall, the Mishnah says, in Beitza, Beit Shammai Omrim, Se'or B'Kezayin, and we had this discussion in Psachim. So the shear, here it's talking about to be over on Baal Yera'eh and Baal Yematzeh. So the shear of how much Se'or you would have in your rishos to be over on Bayirah, Bayimotze, on Pesach, is the shear of a kizayis. But if you just have chametz, the shear is a kotevet. Now, the point over here is that remember that sa'or is more powerful, it's sourdough, and therefore it will make other things chametz. Whereas normal chametz is itself chametz, but it's not machmitz other things. So what is the logic that Beit Shammai is saying? Beit Shammai says like this. The reason that I hold that chometz and se'or are different is because Nichtov Rachmana Chametz, V'lo Ba'isa'or. Let's say that the Torah would only say that Lo Yera'eh L'cha Chametz, and it would not have said Sivat Yamim Sa'or Lo Yimatzei B'vatechem. It wouldn't have said Lo Yera'eh L'cha Sa'or B'chol Gvulecha. Wouldn't I have known myself Sa'or? Lo Ba'isa'or, because I would have said to myself, look, if the Torah is answering just plain Chametz bread, She'ein chimutzo kasher, where it doesn't have so much power to be mechametz acherim, and nonetheless it is asering it as that minimum shear of a kizayit. So sa'or is certainly going to be also the shear of a kizayis, because I have a right to derive one from the other. Sa'or shechimutzo kasher lo kol shekein. The only reason for spelling it out in this way and telling me two separate psukim, one for chametz and one from sa'or, is because midepalginu rachmana, the whole point of saying it openly in two separate psukim, is to say, look, if you were going to derive it from a kal v'chomer, then you would be stuck with the same shear on both, right? Because you can never learn out more than the information that goes in. That's called dayola v'omina din liot kinidon. So the most you would be able to say is, if the Torah had asert chametz lo yimatzei, so I would have said, kol shekein sa'or li yimatzei. Just like the shear of chametz is a kizayit, the shear of sa'or is a kizayit. Since the Torah says it is two separate things, so obviously it wants to tell me that the shiurim are actually not the same, and that's why I have to spell it out. So then that would mean that the shiur that is given, the one that we know, which is the sa'or lo yimatzei bevatechem, that's the shiur of a kizayis. But that would mean that chametz requires the next shear up, because it must be that it's more kal than the sa'or is. What's the next shear up that he came up with? The next shear up that he came up with was that it must be that the sa'or is b'kizayit, but the chametz is b'kukotevet. So since chametz is less powerful, only a more chametz, the shear of a kotevet, would be enough to make it a bal yera'eh bal yimatzei. Now, if you're going to tell me that a kotevet agasa is larger than a kibetza, what right would he have to say that the shear is a kotevet? All Beit Shammai is looking for is the next level up. He doesn't have any basis to say particularly kibetza or anything else. So he's saying, I know what's given is that the shear of achilah on the sa'or is the chametz. Okay, fine. Is the kizayit. Now, if you're telling me that chametz is also usur, must be that it requires a little bit more. What's the next shear up? And the first thing that he comes up with is a kotevet. But if a kotevet is bigger than a kibetza, then the next thing that he should have come up with is a kibetza. And he should have said, so, or you're over and by your own, by your matzah with the shear of kizayit, and chametz, you're only going to be over and by your own, by your matzah on the shear of a kibetza. And if he says kotevet, it must mean that kotevet is less than a kibetza, don't you see? Because Isaac, that kotevet agasa shamru, is more than a kibetza. So then, consider what's going on over here. Beit Shammai is only looking for the next level up, right? Beit Shammai ashiura denofish mikizayet kamahadri. He's searching for the next biggest year. So then he should say kibetza, if that's the kibetza, the next biggest year. And the truth is, even if you're going to tell me, okay, maybe it's the same size as a kibetz, okay? Maybe it's not bigger, but how do I have a right to say it's smaller? No, because even if they were the same size, do you really think that he would want to use the word kotevet? What's the main word that we use for, assuming that there's two things the same size, a kotevet or a kibetz? All through Shas, we always use kibetz. Do you really think that he would say the next size up is a kotevet? He would say the next size up is a kibetza. So then obviously, inamiki adadininu, even if it's the same size, he should have said the word kibetza. El alav, there's only one possible conclusion that we can reach. Shmamina kotevet is pechuta mi kibetza. Must be less. There you go. Says the Gemara, wait. You're getting mixed up over here. We were talking about a kotevet agasa. Right? We said a kotevet agasa, that's what we were discussing, a kotevet agasa that's written over here in Yomah is bigger than a kibetza. And Beit Shammai didn't say a word about kotevet agasa. Beit Shammai said a kotevet. not the same. So it may very well be, look, I could still tell you that the Kotevet HaGasa here in Yoma that we're talking about is Meyat V'Daite. Maybe Rava's right. That is bigger than a Kebetza. But a regular Kotevet, not a Kotevet HaGasa, the stoma may be that it's the same size as a Kebetza. You know, I don't even buy in to the fact that we'd have to say that it's smaller. It could even be the same size. Maybe it's smaller. I mean, it doesn't bother me. I'm just saying, I don't really think that your conclusion that why don't we use the word kibetza? I mean, because even if inami ki adadeninu, if they'd be the same size, basically, Beit Shammai wanted to use the same type of shear that we referred to when we were talking about the next shear up, l'gabei Yom HaKippurim. So he wanted to use the shear, which is similar to a shear of Achila. So he wanted to use the one that we use for Yom Kippur. So Chodemi Nayo Nakad, he used the word of Kotevet. Maybe it was the same shear as a Kebetz. Maybe it's less even. But the point is that the Kotevet HaGasa is not the same as a Kotevet. So you can't bring a raya from here that it's less. The Kotevet HaGasa is less than a Beitza. Elamihach. Okay, I'll bring you a raya from the Bracha, the Sugim Brachas. Over there, the Mishnah says, Adkam amizamnin, what's the shear that is mechayev you to bake Birkat HaMazon? Remember that in Brachos we use the word mizamnim, meaning that you should join up to a Birchas HaZimon as a stand-in very often for the words of Levarech. Fine. But that's what it meant over there. So what would be the shear that's mechayev you to join in Birkat HaMazon? It has to be a kizayit, according to Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, kizayit is not enough to be mechayev you. It's a kebetza. Now, what's the machlokas over there about the shear of Birkat HaMazon? So b'mayka miflege. So Rabbi Meir's shita is v'achalta v'savata uveirachta. Is to be understood like this. V'achalta is to eat. Eat is always all over the Torah. The meaning of the shear of achila is a kizayit. Visavata means that there should also be drinking. And then, achila, as defined all over, is bekizayit. Actually, learning like that, even la halacha, there are many who paskin that if you would eat a kizayit, and then you would say Birkat HaMazon, and then you would take a drink, you would have to say Birkat HaMazon again. Because the achalta v'savata would be a chi of the araisa, and according to Rabbi Meir, that's achila v'shtia. So if you were being machmer with the rabbonin of a shira v'achila of a kezayit, so then you weren't yotzei, your chi of the araisa, which is only chal in the moment that you do the drinking. So it comes out to be an important nafkamina about how to be darish the pasuk, not only in terms of the shir. Rabbi Yehuda savar, the achalta v'savata is one thing, a type of achila that gives you an actual satisfaction. Achila sheyesh basviya, and in this case, the achila is now redefined as a different type of achila, and that is the shear of a kibetza. Now, if you're going to tell me that a kotevet agasa sha'amru is yiterami kibetza, so if our Mishnah is talking about more than a kibetza, so then ask yourself, okay, if achila sheyesh bo sviya, sviya means that your mom is satisfied. So you're telling me if you eat a kibetza, so then you're feeling full, then you're feeling satisfied, then you're chayev in Birkat HaMazon or Libet Rabbi Yehuda. But if you ate a kibetza, you're not going to be over on achila on Yom HaKippurim because you're still in a state of inui. That's insane. How could you be in a state of inui if, on the other hand, you're defining that shear of a kibetza as a state of full satisfaction? You can't have it both ways. So obviously, I mean, if kibetza is actually sabui mispat, if it makes you feel full, so then daita lo miyatva, you're telling me that it would not be considered to be a violation of inui? It doesn't make you feel, at the very least, that you're not desperate to eat? That's crazy. Of course it can't mean that. Ela lav shmamina. So you see from the whole sugya that the kotevet agasasha amru has to be pachot mi kibetza, so that we understand that if you would eat an entire kibetza, then you feel really satisfied. And at that point, you're chayav in Birkat HaMazon. If you ate only a kizayit, then you wouldn't even feel that you've taken off the edge of your hunger. You're still going to be desperate, so you're in a state of inui. If you ate a kotevet, which is between the shear of the kizayit and the shear of the kibetza, so then while you still don't feel really satisfied, but at least miyat v'dayte, at least you feel that you're not desperate, and so memela, you would be over on Yom HaKippurim because you're no longer in a state of inui. So therefore, it would turn out that the kotevet hagasah has got to be pochot mikibetza. Otherwise, the whole sugya doesn't make sense.